Hey, it's Friday again, already, and it's time for another movie retrospective. Going back to the 1980s, going back to 80s werewolf movies.
Oh, yeah.
This is actually one of the best, and, you know, I say this as saying, like, I'm
Wolfen.
Not... Yeah. No, I'm saying this is, there's not, like, a shit ton of werewolf movies, I guess, yeah. And there's really not that many good ones. I can maybe think of four or five.
Yeah.
The one we're doing today is one of them. It is The Howling.
The Howling.
Kind of an unappreciated gem.
Yeah.
From 1981. It came out only, was it 2 months before or 2 months after An American Werewolf in London?
I think it was after.
And it was actually like a lot of, you know,
yeah,
interconnection between the people that worked on it and stuff like that. So we'll get into that a little bit.
Yeah, and back in the day when you were a kid, this was I always thought this was a lot more impressive than American Werewolf in London. There were more werewolves. It was more like a slasher flick. It was more like watching like Friday the 13th or something. I liked it.
Yeah, it's like the tone of the movies is kind of different. Like, yeah. I'll kind of get into that. I'm not really
sleazy.
Sure which one I like better. They both have their charms.
Yeah.
Like I said, really the only other good werewolf movies I can think of, modern era, Dog Soldiers, awesome. Ginger Snaps was pretty good. Company of Wolves.
I didn't see any of those.
That's about it.
I didn't see any of those.
Remember? Oh, you know, you would actually probably really like Dog Soldiers.
Yeah, I probably would.
That came out in 2009, 2007,
yeah, I don't know.
Somewhere like that.
You have to check
it's
it
really
out.
Good. It's British. It's but it's a really good movie. Like, this werewolves in it were really scary. But The Howling actually came out in 1981. Like I said, it seems like it gets overshadowed a little bit by An American Werewolf in London, but in many ways I think it's just as good. It's actually based on a novel by Gary Brandner, although the novel is not really the same. They changed a lot of things. This was directed by Joe Dante, who obviously did Piranha. The success of this movie actually led to him getting Gremlins. So, you know, that's how that whole thing went. This movie, it's almost like you said, it has like a sleazier vibe than American Werewolf in London. It's also funny, but not in the same way that American Werewolf in London. I mean, American Werewolf in London has scary moments, but it's obviously a horror comedy.
Right.
This one, the humor is a lot more sardonic, satirical. It's almost kind of like a satirical kind of werewolf movie. And there's like a lot of in-jokes and like references in there for people who are horror fans.
Yeah, lots of callbacks to Lon Chaney and other werewolf movies and stuff too.
Yeah, there's like a really lot of Easter eggs in this. Because Joe Dante is like a huge horror fan.
Yeah.
And he always kind of did that like putting cameos and like what he named characters and stuff like
wolf
that.
Wolf chili.
Yeah.
Wolf chili.
Yeah, like little cans of wolf brand chili and stuff. But yeah, I'll get into that a little bit more later too. But basically the whole setup of the movie... And I'll get a little bit into how it differs from the book, too. But the whole setup of the movie has to do with a newscaster. And she is played by Dee Wallace. And she is being stalked by a serial killer.
Yeah, if you know who Dee Wallace is, she's the girl from Frighteners. The older woman who was Johnny Bartlett's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was also the mom in E.T.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she was in a shit ton of genre movies
recognizing your
back in the day. But yeah, so she's been being stalked by this serial killer named Eddie Quist. So the police have been utilizing her like to catch him, right? So she like agrees to meet him like in this sleazy porno theater, and you know, the police end up shooting him, but she sees him during this really traumatic episode, but then the episode is so traumatic, like the attack on her, that she kind of gets sort of partial amnesia, like she can't remember what he looked like, she can't remember anything like that. So as a, you know, to kind of get over the trauma of this whole incident, her psychiatrist, who is played by Patrick McNee.
Yeah, he always shows up.
Yeah. He's in a shit ton of movies too. Sends her and her husband, Bill, who is actually played by her real-life husband in this movie, at least at the time. I don't know if they're still married or not. But they go to this retreat out in the woods because it was, you know, 1981, y'all, and it was California. So, you know, anything that was wrong with you, they could send you out in the woods and run around for a little while, and it would cure all that ailed you.
Like they did in all the horror movies back then.
They kind of did.
They did that in...
that was some
not
new
Videodrome, but what was the other one by... what was in it? The Brood.
Yeah, The Brood. Same kind of thing.
Same kind of thing.
Where they send you to the kind of this forest retreat, and it's supposed to, like, you know, be psychologically good for you. Because apparently that's what's wrong with everybody.
Yeah,
your
the hand also.
Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah, everything was all about,
that's what I mean. You know, that seemed like late 70s, energy. Early 80s. Yeah, that was like a kind of a new age of Aquarius type of thing. Yeah. Where they'd always like send you out in the woods so you could like run around and like let loose your inner asshole, I guess. I don't know. Your
child and all
that. That too. But yeah.
Shit. They make all kinds of money selling those things to people too, man.
Yeah. I don't think so. Well,
and there's something about this. When they start getting into this element of the movie, it also always reminded me of the movie The Island, which we did another...
Yeah, you said that while we were watching.
Yeah, that a group of pirates and a group of werewolves in the wilderness kind of seem a lot alike. It just reminded me of that same situation when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And the movies, the way they were filmed, they kind of had that similar tone. In a way,
I see what you're saying.
Both of these movies
I see what you're saying.
They were from that period in my childhood.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
But so, like, they go to this mountain retreat, and it's not even a spoiler, and I'm sure it will not be a surprise to anyone, that this place, which is called The Colony, is all werewolves.
They're all werewolves.
They're all werewolves. But an interesting thing about this, it seems like, and I don't know, I'm pretty sure this was probably the first werewolf movie to do this, because it seemed like most werewolf movies prior to this one, and even American Werewolf in London had this too, they kind of took the trope from the Universal Wolfman, where the Wolfman, like the whole plot of the story was, you know, this poor guy, he's just wandering around the moors or whatever, he gets bitten by a wolf, and then it's like a tragedy because he like turns into a wolf, he's killing people and he doesn't mean to. It's like a Jekyll and Hyde type thing, although not quite, because Jekyll and Hyde did that shit deliberately. But so they all kind of had that plot. But the interesting thing about The Howling, and they don't go super into it, they don't beat a dead horse about it or anything like that, but kind of the background theme of the whole story is that that werewolves are real, they exist, there didn't have to be any full moon or any of that bullshit, they're just shapeshifters, they can pretty much wolf out whenever they want to. But then there's like two factions of werewolves.
Yeah.
Like some of them are living out in this colony, they're raising cattle to eat so that they don't have to eat people. But there are some like defectors like in the group that are like, no, we still want to be werewolves like the old days and go out and like tear people's heads off and shit like that. So there's like a thing between these two groups of werewolves where we just want to be, you know, some of the like werewolf pride, I guess you could say. Yeah. Like some of them are like, yeah, we want to kill people. That's what we do. And then other ones are like, no, we need to learn to live with people and not hurt them, and but still be werewolves, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and then there's always like an observer, like some kind of a doctor or professor who's watching over the group. Like, yeah, it's just man letting out his primal self.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like why it reminded me of The Island, because they had that, what was he? He was a sociologist.
Yeah.
Saying that, no, these are real men. The way these pirates are, they're acting as real men, you know, that this is the way people are supposed to be.
But yeah, you know, that's kind of, it's kind of the same theme analogy, as this. Yeah. Because the psychiatrist who actually sends Dee Wallace and her husband off to the colony is, he's not a werewolf, is he? Like, he's just kind of like the werewolf overseer.
Yeah, he's like the overseer, I thought.
He's the one that's like trying to encourage them. It's fine to be werewolves.
He's giving them psychotherapy.
But don't like kill people about it or anything. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like I said, it's not, they don't like go super into it. There's really only a couple scenes where that's mentioned. But it's kind of cool because it's sort of this underlying kind of thing. There's also a really, really heavy undercurrent of sex in this movie, like sex and violence, like intertwined. You know, there is the very, very, probably one of the most famous scenes in the movie, other than the transformation scene, is the werewolf sex scene between Dee Wallace's husband and the hot lady werewolf.
Yeah, that I had a crush on that girl since I was a little boy.
I think everyone did, male or female.
Yeah, I like that one.
There was something very sexy about her.
She was goth before I knew what goth was.
Yeah, she was like a gothy, gypsy-ish looking.
Native American kind of BDSM.
Plus, werewolf. You get to see Bush.
Yeah,
not
that's
just
right. I forgot
tits.
About that. Forgot about that. Yeah.
You get to see tits and Bush.
Yeah.
And she turns into a werewolf.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, boners popped up all over the internet.
Back in the day.
I think that actress has sadly passed away. But she was actually she was really, really hot in this movie. And so she was one of the ones that you was like, yeah, I'm proud to be a werewolf and suck it. I wanted, like, you know. So there was that whole thing. And there was the whole thing, too, about the serial killer at the beginning, Eddie Quist, who, like I said, not really a spoiler, he turns out to be a werewolf too.
Right.
But his whole thing was when he's at the very beginning, when he's you know, kind of stalking Dee Wallace's character, I mean, she's watching a video in one of those yucky porn booths like they used to have back in the day before we had the internet.
I can't understand how dudes went into that shit.
Can you imagine the germs?
Everything Everything was probably sticky.
Yeah. You wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't like touch anything. You'd have to go in there like a full body fucking plastic suit or some shit.
Imagine if you were the dude that had to clean those booths.
That's what I mean. That you could not pay me enough to do that job. I'm sorry. You really couldn't.
70s, really man. Couldn't. 70s and 80s. It was a nasty time.
It was just like a dirty decade.
And then it was funny because you referred back to Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
That they had to be talking about cocaine. That had to be a direct reference to coke. That's the way a coke fiend is.
Yeah.
He's normal. And then he snorts up. And he goes out and goes to the bar and chases women and acts an ass. Because it makes you an asshole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That has to be
Which explains the entire decade of the 80s.
Well, no. Jekyll and Hyde wasn't the 1980s.
No, I said about cocaine. Yeah.
But they knew that. Oh, that was 1800s, huh?
Yeah.
1800s?
Yeah.
They were playing with it back then. That whoever wrote that must have been
It was legal back then, too.
Yeah, he must have been a coke freak.
Yeah. I have actually heard some people...
Because you have a doctor who's taking something and going out at night and being very different than he normally is.
That's one way of putting it.
That's the same as a dentist getting into his damn cocaine stash because they used it to numb teeth.
Yeah.
And then going out chasing hookers.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about. Anyway.
Yeah, like I said. Well, and like I said, the whole werewolf mythos is essentially it's like the duality of man type thing. And like I said,
We're going to let it ride. Yeah.
So that's why I kind of like that this almost like blatantly made that, not really blatantly because it's just a subtext really, but just kind of made that more obvious maybe, or maybe like enlarge the scope a little bit, because they're not just talking about one person and he gets bitten by a werewolf and now he's killing people he loves and he can't control it and isn't that sad. You're actually talking about people who are werewolves who like being werewolves. And how do we deal with that in modern society type of thing? And like I said, that's kind of a cool subtext. And I don't really think that any werewolf movie had explored that angle of it prior to this.
No, they were doing what you normally would do in the vampire genre.
Right. So,
later on they got it with the Underworld series. That's what they're talking
about. Yeah, it's a similar kind of thing. But I think a lot of the idea like kind of came from this. I don't know how much, but I haven't read the book. I've heard the book is not very good. But, I don't know. I haven't read it, so I'm not going to say. But
well, we know the sequel to this isn't very good.
Are any good?
We couldn't get through it. We're just like,
part two, which was, what's it called? Your Sister is a Werewolf?
I don't know.
Which you already know it's going to suck from that. Come on from that parenthetical title there.
Is that what it was called? I thought it was just Wolfen 2.
It's not Wolfen, it's The Howling.
The Howling 2. Wasn't it The Howling 2?
Yeah, The Howling 2, : Your Sister is a Werewolf.
No shit, that was the name of it?
Okay. Yes.
I keep thinking Wolfen because Wolfen was the sucky werewolf movie.
Yeah,
I didn't
like it when I was a kid. Wolfen came out the same year as this.
Yeah.
I saw it a million times on cable, but I don't remember a single goddamn thing about it.
It was very generic from what I remember. I almost would like to see it again.
I would like to see it again, too, because I don't remember anything about it. It might be good. I remember liking it at the time.
When you're older, you might like it better.
Yeah.
Kind of like Cat People. I didn't really like it at the time.
Which one? The original or the remake?
The remake.
Oh, okay.
Saw it later in the remake. It was better than I remembered it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've found that like a few times. This, and actually The Howling I saw a lot on cable back in the day, but when we watched it, it's on Shudder.
Yeah.
And it was actually much better than I remembered.
Cat People is basically a werewolf story. It's a
It's similar. It's just a cat instead of a wolf. Same type of thing. Now let's talk a little bit about the special effects in this, which are actually quite amazing.
Yeah.
Now, Rick Baker was initially supposed to do the special effects for this, but then he went and did American Werewolf in London and the very famous daylight transformation scene, which people still talk about to this day because it still looks amazing.
Yeah.
Now, his understudy, Rob Bottin, ended up doing The Howling. Now, obviously, he also went on to do The Thing and went on to do many other movies, so he's no slouch. He was only like 20 or 21 when he did this movie. And I have to say, the transformation of Eddie Quist into the werewolf still looks pretty goddamn good, I think.
Yeah, it could be hard to beat that for practical effects, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, how they did, they had like all these latex applications on the actor's face, and like they had all these like air bladders like underneath it, so it looked like the front of his face was coming out and like all the things coming out of his hands and stuff. It's not done like in full day. you know, like an American Werewolf in London is. It's done kind of in darkness, but still they have close-ups on the face and it's like kind of all deforming and shit. And you can tell the dude is still in there. So I think it still looks almost as good. I mean, I'm going to say 95% as good as the an American Werewolf in London one, I think. Yeah. And I also think that, because in American Werewolf, when David Naughton was in like werewolf mode, he actually just looked like a real big wolf, yeah. right? Now in this one, they look more like a werewolf. Yeah, it looks like a big
bipedal.
Yeah, like a big bipedal wolf. Dude that's like a wolf with like big long ears and a big, you know,
with the wolf feet.
Just and they're like even standing on their toes right, and stuff like that, which that was a kind of a cool detail, and I'm glad they did that.
And sometimes they used like cartoon animation for that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was practical effects, sometimes it was art animation. It just depended on the shot. I thought it was effective.
Yeah.
With that kind of stuff, at least with the practical effect, I kind of prefer it to CG a lot of the times. It depends on the movie.
Yeah.
Because it does look like it's there.
And yeah,
a lot
because
of that CG
is.
Stuff doesn't look like it's really there. It doesn't look like it has any weight.
That is the main problem that I have with CGI.
We saw Venom the other day, and Venom looked great, but none of that stuff looked real to me. None of it looked like it was massive.
I don't mind it so much like in a fantasy-type setting or something like that, but when you're doing something that's supposed to be real, like, you know, a werewolf monster that's like set, you know, when it's like set in the modern day, when it's not like in a fantasy or like a sci-fi type
it's
of
better
setting.
Better not to show it much and have
just don't show it. I mean, fuck, like I said, as far as I know, as far as practical effects go, you're never going to beat Alien. You're never going to beat an American Werewolf in London. That shit was
Predator
there.
One.
Yeah, it doesn't date.
Right.
Because they're not using some CGI that in 20 years is going to look like a fucking cutscene from a shit-ass video game.
The new Predator, you know, the Predator?
Yeah.
It looked okay, but that CGI super tall big Predator thing, it just didn't look real. I knew that wasn't there.
Yeah.
Not in the
and like I said,
resolution.
I'm not like a total, you know, I'm not one of those total like old people that's like, oh, no CGI. No. But I think it looks better when it's just used to enhance something that's really there rather than just creating monsters and characters out of whole cloth.
I would have rather seen less than that big old Predator.
Yeah.
Or seen close-ups and different camera angles to make him appear much bigger than he was. I didn't actually have to see that thing standing next to a car. You know what I mean? Because it didn't look real to me.
That's what I mean. It's better when it's, and I think I've said this before, but I think it's better when it's judiciously applied.
Right.
So, you know, and like I said, when you see an American Werewolf in London, when you see The Howling, which were made in 1981, and your werewolf looks better than a werewolf movie that perhaps was made a year or two ago, that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a problem for the movies back then because they knew what the fuck they were doing. But it's a little bit of a problem for now. And it's like, I don't know if, I'm sure they'll probably resolve it at some point, but CGI just, it never looks real to me. It always looks like a video game or a cartoon or something. It
took a certain amount of talent and you had to have young guys that were willing to work long hours to get practical effects right.
And the thing that you can see,
they didn't always get it right. There was some problems in
oh,
the
yeah.
The hair on them. Sometimes it looked a little bit too long for me.
Yeah.
They should have trimmed the hair down. You know what I mean? It was long strands. Wolves don't have hair like that.
Yeah.
But it looked good. I mean, it's obviously something that's really there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. So in that way, it's
in
like...
In that way, it looked better.
And it is a lot more menacing. I think a werewolf is a lot more menacing if it's like a dude in a suit than if it's like a CGI monster. Because all I can think of is when they were shooting this, the girl was like, oh no, a werewolf, except
nothing was there.
Like maybe a tennis ball, like against a green screen or something. So she knew where to look. That's like, so that's the only thing I can think of. It's, you know.
One of those shots of that big werewolf, I had to ask you, I said, is that an animatronic or is there a man in that? And you said there's a man in that. And I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
I'm going, no, I think it's an animatronic. Because
the
body looked too long.
They cut back and forth.
You're right.
They had a few animatronic creatures, you know, that moved. It was the same with American Werewolf in London. But some of it was, like I said, latex applications. And they put things underneath it. So it, like, would bubble out and stuff like that. So
you know it's pretty effective if it's fooling you, if you're not really sure if there's a man or not in it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And that's exactly my point.
Yeah.
And honestly, like I said, other than American Werewolf in London, which is kind of like the gold standard for 80s werewolf transformations, this is a very, very, very close second. And like I said, it's Rob Bottin. He did The Thing, which the effects in that obviously are some of the best ever done.
Yeah.
So it's not that far off and for someone so young. But, and another thing I wanted to talk about too is that There's a shit ton of like cute little, cause like I said, this does have some humor in it, but it's very subtle humor. It's very satirical. A lot of it is like the references. Almost every single character in this movie is named after a director of a of an old werewolf movie. And, also there are some like cameos. There's one part where Dee Wallace is in the phone booth. And she leaves the phone. There's a guy standing outside, like, waiting for the phone booth. And that's Roger Corman. And Roger Corman was also the one who taught Joe Dante. Like, you know what I mean? So Joe Dante was, like, his student. So he was kind of making an homage there. In the occult bookstore scene, Forrest Ackerman, obviously, famous Monsters of Filmland, makes a cameo appearance. Also, the guy that's in there, the actor, I can't remember what his name is, but... his character name is Walter Paisley, and that was the same name as the part he played in Roger Corman's A Bucket of Blood. So he's playing, like, the same guy. Like, yeah. It was the same universe. Another thing I want to talk about, too, is this movie is kind of, like, ahead of its time. I feel like it's, like, almost like a meta-horror in the Scream type of vein, but many, many years before Scream. You know what I mean? Because it's very self-referential. And also the end part where, and like I said, I'm, you know, it's like, yeah, spoiler alert and stuff like that, but it's like, I'm not going to worry about it. So the end,
okay.
Because I just want to talk about this. The end part where the main character, you know, Dee Wallace's character, she is a TV reporter and goes on TV and wants to warn the world about the werewolves. So, you know, she werewolves out. On live television, yeah. And then they show like all these people in the TV audience going, whatever, special effects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was almost like making like a sly like media company. Yeah. Even back in 1981, yeah. They were talking about how TV had to like resort to these cheap ass tactics to get people to watch it and stuff like that, which I thought was very funny. And I was like, that's really something that that's been since time immemorial they've been like making that joke.
What was funny about that is that my memory of that last scene was nothing like the way it really looked. I remembered her transforming into like a really pretty werewolf, but when I saw it, it didn't look like that at all.
No, she just looked like a werewolf.
Any other werewolf, and it actually looked like a hand puppet to me. I think it might have been a miniature.
I don't know, actually.
It didn't look like it was full size. It looked like maybe it was a small hand puppet. Of a werewolf, you know what I'm talking about. Don't want to sound like an asshole, but I'm not sure that was a full sized werewolf costume.
That's what happens. See, girls don't turn into werewolves; they just turn into werewolf puppets.
I think it might have been a puppet around. You know what I'm talking about? A miniature desk. It didn't seem to be full size to me.
I didn't notice that.
Eyes and everything.
I don't know if that was just you and you were really drunk, or
I was drinking,
or if I just wasn't paying that close attention.
But the eyes on it didn't look like a human eyes looking through a mask. It looked like glass beads, and the way it moved looked like somebody with a hand puppet.
Now I'm gonna have to go watch again.
I don't think it was a full
because I don't remember. I don't remember costume. Being it obvious to me that it's like, ooh.
When I saw it,
look,
I was
it's
like,
the Muppet Show.
Yeah, when I saw it, I said, "That's a Muppet." That's a puppet. I think it was.
It's a werewolf puppet.
I think
puppet.
It was. Well, they did that sometimes.
Miniatures. They use miniatures a lot. Most of the time you could tell, and especially, you know, if
in
it was...
In the thing, in the final end, when they're fighting the huge thing that was underneath the ground, all the tentacles, it's a miniature.
Okay, but I never noticed that, though.
Yeah, even all the little barrels, the ground, everything, it's a miniature. I never noticed it, but that's what it is. They used lots of miniatures.
They did, but sometimes you could tell and sometimes you couldn't. Right. Because sometimes when I go back and like watch some stuff and then later on I learn it was a miniature.
Yeah.
Like you remember when we were doing the Escape from New York and they said, we built the whole city of New York and we put like all these fucking, this glow tape and shit around it. So it would look like, and I was like, my God.
The
shot
of Manhattan skyline with the water and everything. It's a miniature in a garage with a wet floor.
Yeah.
Shot from the right angle.
See, I never would.
With the right lighting.
Until I saw that document, my mind was blown.
Yeah. Doesn't look like a miniature, but it is.
It really, really doesn't. But like I said, you know, there's some, obviously, let's talk about Superman, Logan's Run, you know, stuff like that have miniatures that are obviously miniatures.
Yeah.
But
Logan's Run's bad about,
It is, obviously. But, you know, when a miniature is done well, you shouldn't be able to tell. It should be seamless. And I've, yeah. Escape from New York was obviously very seamless. And like I said, I don't remember the scene that you're talking about. Now I'm going to have to go back and watch the end again.
When they shot the werewolf movie theater.
Yeah.
Well, when I saw it, you know, they have the newscasters behind the table.
Yeah.
The table looked miniature.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the werewolf looked miniature. It looked like a hand puppet.
It could have been.
Yeah, I'll have to see it again. I was drunk.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Maybe you just imagine that shit. I don't know.
I was running with Kugel Khan. About halfway there.
Holy crap.
Oh, yeah, I fucking downed it.
You did. I haven't even gotten to that.
We got a lot of episodes to film today, too, so they're good.
Well, just two more. Two more. We're trying to get ahead because, you know, Halloween show and all this other kind of stuff.
Right,
which reminds me, that's something that I was going to mention. Okay, well, while we're still talking about The Howling.
Yeah.
They did do a couple scenes in stop motion animation and a couple scenes in like traditional cell animation. Doesn't look so good. They just did it for budgets. But honestly, nowadays, when you watch it nowadays, it's almost like it was just an artistic choice.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, because the two scenes where they do it is just like very, very brief. And I'm always kind of like, ooh, arty. Like not, you know, I didn't think they were trying to get it to look real, but I guess they were.
The time when the three werewolves were trying to tear into that car looked pretty cool. Those are pretty big werewolves.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were people in costumes or animatronics. I think they were an animatronic monster. Yeah. It looked big.
Yeah.
I mean, the car was small. It was a what? TR7 or something, a little convertible?
You would know. I wouldn't.
Yeah. You know the deal. It was a Mazda is what it was. I think it was a Mazda RX-7.
Did somebody comment on that in the movie, what kind of car it was?
Yes, we said, yeah, you can afford a Mazda, that's what the guy said.
That's right, okay, that's what I was thinking.
So it looked like an RX-7, one of the old rotaries, flip-up headlights and stuff. But they were small.
Yeah.
About the size of a Miata.
But I actually do really like I said, from everything I've heard, I've seen the second movie of this, Howling 2, Your Sister's a Werewolf. I saw it on cable back in the day. And remember just being like, whatever. And then we tried to watch it again. It was on Tubi, I think. Yeah. We got about 20 minutes in, and we're just like, this is painful. Yeah. Painful. We had to turn it off.
Scanners. I remember the sequels to Scanners being pretty good, but I tried to watch Scanners 2, and I just couldn't get through it. We're like, God, this is terrible.
Seeing it through those nostalgia glasses, see? But that's why it's good to revisit some of this stuff.
Scanners. Trancers.
Yeah.
Seeing Trancers through nostalgia glasses.
You thought that was so awesome.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I said, man, Trancers was a good one. Saw it again, and I'm like, this is fucking shit. It was just incoherent.
It really was. I'm good at following movies, but I'm sitting there going, what the fuck is going on?
What is going on in this movie?
Did someone dose me? I don't know what's happening. And I like David Lynch movies, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, what the hell is this movie about?
It was very bad. But yeah, so from what I've heard, so I didn't even bother with any of the rest of the sequels. Apparently there were like roughly a million of them.
Who knows? Maybe they get better, but
not from what I've heard.
No, they get worse.
I've heard thrown around, you know how bad all the Amityville sequels were? Like however 50 bajillion of those there were, they're like, these ones are worse.
I'll tell you what, though. The only series where they seem to get better as they go is Phantasm. Phantasm kicked ass.
It really did.
It got better with each film.
We're going to have to review 3, 4, and 5 because we watched all those like in close proximity Phantasm to one another. And we've already done 1 and 2. So.
That's my favorite series for horror, I think.
It's the most consistently good, I feel like.
It's consistently good, yeah. And very
original. Evil Dead, too. All the Evil Deads are good.
It's up there with Evil Dead.
And the TV show is good.
I think I'm going to give Phantasm the nod, though.
Just because it's weirder.
Weirder. More of an original premise.
Yeah. That's my favorite thing about Phantasm is how fucking weird it is. And it doesn't even care. It's just like...
You can tell that they're made with love.
Yeah. Just like, look how weird this shit is. We don't even care.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's balls. Yeah, there's dwarves. Whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I said, if you haven't seen The Howling, because like I said, it gets overshadowed a lot because it came out at pretty much the same time as An American Werewolf in London. And they're very different movies, though. Like I said, it's funny, but not funny the way American Werewolf in London is funny. It's more of a straight-up horror movie. It's kind of like I said, it's self-referential, so it's sort of like Scream, but it also has some old-school tropes. Like it has like an old organ type of theme going on too, and they're like the old monster movies, and so it has more of a sleazy vibes, darker.
I'm gonna put it up there with The Island. Good movies like Videodrome and The Brood, you know, in that vein. I liked it.
And it was actually, like I said, I hadn't seen it probably since the mid-80s. And seeing it again, it was like really, I was like, wow, this is like way, it was like much better than I remember.
It's as good as The Hand, even though it's quite different than The Hand.
Yeah. I love The Hand.
The Hand was awesome.
That movie freaked me the fuck out.
The Hand again, man.
That movie freaked me the fuck out back in the day. Dismemberment, like, always gonna get
me. Michael Caine. I mean, Michael Caine's Michael fucking Caine is another one that's just like, he's just one gin and tonic away from whipping your fucking ass.
He definitely seems like a barely contained crazy person.
Just fucking nuts.
But that's what makes him awesome, though, is because you can tell it's just like seething under there.
At any
like,
moment, that motherfucker.
And who knows when it's going to happen. You might be there to witness
it.
He's
going to be a dick at any moment.
He just busts out with it. But yeah, so before we end up the review, this is going to be the first review that's going to go up before our new experimental show. Yeah. I know that I said that we were going to wait until we got to $1,000 on Patreon before we start a third show, blah, blah, blah.
We ain't got time for that, though. We ain't got time for that.
Well, and honestly, this was something that we just came up with, like, a few days ago. He came up with it, and I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that shit, like, now. So what we decided to do, since, as we mentioned on the show before, we got a subscription to the AMC Stubbs A-List program, where you pay $20 a month, you can see three movies a week at the theater. So he's like, well, why don't we just turn that into a third show?
To review new movies.
We'll just go see three movies. We'll do little capsule reviews of them and then edit them together at the end of the week. And it'll be like our week at the movies type of show.
Yeah.
So I was like, that is an excellent idea since we're already going to the movies anyway.
Might as well make that shit work for us and we'll write that shit off as a business expense.
So we just figured
mileage and all.
We would do a third thing about it. So. Yeah. Now, what I'm going to try to do, I'm going to try and put them up on Sundays, because it's like the end of the week / beginning of the week, and, you know, our little movie watching thing, like, renews on Friday. So we usually go in the midweek and see three movies, and then I can have the weekend to cut it all together, and then I'll put them up on Sunday. So this one that's going to come up on Sunday, we're doing the three movies that we saw this week. We did have some technical issues with, we took video... Because we've been taking like little intro video before we go into the movie, and then we come out and sit outside of the theater and talk about what we thought of the movie, like our impressions. So we did that for all the movies, except when we went to see Hellfest, we actually recorded our little thoughts afterward, and then we had technical issues, and we lost the video.
Lost it. Couldn't get it out of my...
My
tablet.
So I said, okay, so what we'll do then, I said, we'll just do a little capsule review of Hellfest, you know, just at home, because we still remember it. It was just a couple days ago. And then I'll just put that in with the rest of the stuff. And that's how it goes. But we're going to call it the 13 o'clock matinee with Tom and Jenny.
Yeah, or something like that,
Or something like that. You know, it's just going to be like a little build, maybe like, you know, 15, 20 minute show of just us talking about like going to the movie and talking about what we thought of it, like after we come out of the theater and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's to give you guys a heads up on what's out there right now.
Yeah.
Contemporary movie, what you might want to spend money on.
And same thing.
Or what don't spend money on, too.
Right.
So some of these might be losers.
And obviously, you know, we can see three movies a week. We can't see every fucking movie in the world, but it'll mostly, I mean, obviously we mostly stick with horror, sci-fi, thriller.
Still 12 movies a month.
Yeah. So we'll be doing that. Like I said, Hellfest is one of the ones we did last week. Do you want to tell them the other ones, or is it going to be a surprise?
We'll do it later.
Yeah. So that'll be something that you guys can look forward to. Hopefully you will enjoy it. Well, I'm not going to do an audio version. I'll just do a video for the for YouTube.
Yeah.
Because I don't see the point of doing an audio version of us sitting in the movie theater. No. Like talking about a movie. Because no one could see it if they were just listening on audio.
Yeah.
So anyway, that will wrap up our latest movie retrospective. And remember, as I say every time, if you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast or go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. Please send your scary stories, either true or fictional, to gravecake@gmail.com. You only have a couple more days because we're going to record the Halloween episode on the 19th, the 20th, the 21st, somewhere around there. So just to be safe, get it to me before the 19th. If you want it read on the show, I've already got a shit ton and there's like a lot of really good ones. This is going to be like a really fun show. We're going to have some guests and stuff too. So if you want to get them in, then hurry up and do that in the next week. And I think that will do it for our movie retrospective, right?
Yeah.
All right. We will see you next time. Bye.